Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about the oldest commercial Linux out there, SUSE. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 475, recorded March 14th, 2018, SUSE. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Cloud Spanner from Google Cloud Platform. Cloud Spanner is the only horizontally scalable and strongly consistent relational database service. To learn more, visit g.co/getspanner today. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Synergy.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and be unaware of it, but today's might be one of those, or projects you might want to download right after the show and play with it. Again, today may be one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, and I want to really, first off, just straight up, thank you for taking over the show 2 weeks ago when I was sick because I couldn't do anything. I didn't have a voice left, but thank you for stepping in and immediately becoming host for that show. I really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It happens to the best of us. So, yeah, no worries.
Okay, cool. I am speaking to you from beautiful downtown Santa Monica. I'm on the 11th floor of the third tallest building in Santa Monica. I believe it's the third tallest. And my primary client, ZipRecruiter, they also graciously allow me to use this room for a long time, even though all the rooms are in precious state, so I have to mention their name at least once. Anyway, and where are you speaking to us from, Aaron?
I am speaking to you from my not-so-secret lair in lovely Northern California, where I work on all sorts of projects and things. I've got this little one of the projects I'm working on currently here. You can see a little ESP8266, you know, a little seven segment display and stuff. So I'm kind of going crazy on projects right now. I've got about three active projects laid out on my desk in piles.
Oh no, crazy stuff.
Finish them up.
Well, I had a really great time at Scale last week. I'll talk a little bit more about it at the end of the show. But we have a really special guest on today. I mean, of course, every guest we bring on is special. I should stop trying to rank them somehow. That's kind of stupid. But it's about Alan Clark, who is the chair of the OpenHPC Business Governing Board and chairman of the OpenStack Foundation and director of industry initiatives, the emerging standards, and open source at SUSE. And that's sort of the focus I want to make today is SUSE. SUSE is one of the oldest Unix distros, and it was the first one to be commercialized, as far as I can understand, or at least what their press release says. So this is going to be really cool. Now, the problem is I know very little about Linux. You know, I hang out occasionally with Linus Torvalds, been on a couple of cruises with him, but that's about my limit of knowing what Linux is about. Well, and I know it's, of course, like the most popular operating system for open source. So a little bit of this is going to be getting into the history of what SUSE is, how did it get started. I think we're also going to be asking about the relationship between the people who are doing OpenSUSE and SUSE. I think I'm guessing, but we'll get clarity later, that it's kind of like a Red Hat Fedora sort of relationship. But I probably just offended our guest by comparing it to that. But what do you know about this so far?
I've been following SUSE since the early days of Linux. I run Linux on a daily basis, of course, on my desktops and laptops, and on all of my servers and various Raspberry Pis and things. So I'm heavily into this. But SUSE actually, from a business perspective, has been popping up more and more for the various companies that I've worked for over the past 10 years or so, from our customers who are looking for support for the various products with SUSE. So I'm actually really anxious to hear what they're doing in terms of cloud and microservices and containers and all of that kind of stuff. And, of course, their relationship with the open source community, because that's what we're here to talk about. So, yeah, lots of good stuff.
And then, and also because of the OpenStack overlap, I imagine we'll get into a little bit of the history of OpenStack. And I think we did a whole show on OpenStack, but it was like must have been 4 or 5 years ago. So
it was early on.
time to revisit that a little bit and get caught up with that as well. So I'm sure this is going to be one of those shows that we wish we had 2 hours to do. And we started a few minutes late, so it's pretty bad. But before we get started, I do have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by CloudSpanner from Google Cloud Platform. We've all come to expect that distributed databases can't be both relational and scalable. But what if you didn't have to make trade-offs? What if you could have a fully managed database service that's consistent, scales horizontally across data centers, and speaks SQL? Introducing CloudSpanner, a mission-critical relational database service from Google Cloud Platform. Built from the ground up and battle-tested at Google for strong consistency and high availability at global scale. CloudSpanner delivers scalability, high transaction performance, and strong consistency across rows, regions, and continents with a 99.999% availability SLA. No planned downtime. Enterprise-grade security. Multi-language support. Client libraries in C#, Go, Java, Node.js, PHP, Python, and Ruby, a JDBC driver for connectivity with popular third-party tools. And pricing is simple and predictable. Learn more about CloudSpanner at g.co/getspanner today. That's g.co/getspanner. One more time, g.co/getspanner. And we thank CloudSpanner from Google Cloud Platform for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Alan Clark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it, Randall. It's great to be with you guys.
Great. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm actually based out of Salt Lake City, and I'm down here in my man cave with, all my same kind of toys as you guys are playing with, my Raspberry Pis and so forth. So,
cool. Well, let's focus.
But it's fun.
Go ahead. We have the usual Skype delay, which always makes conversations that we interact with a little bit tough. So give us a 30,000-foot view. We'll start first with SUSE, the company. How did that get started, and what's happened to it since? That, because that's like 17 acquisitions, but you don't have to do them all. Let's take the broad strokes.
Okay, we'll do the broad strokes here. So SUSE started delivering enterprise-grade Linux 25 years ago, right? So it's a long time. Seems like, which is very interesting when you look at it, because we tend to think that open source projects are very short term, right? They live, they come, they die, they get a lot of hype, and then they fade away. But Linux continues to grow. So SUSE jumped into the Linux market years ago and has been growing ever since. And as you mentioned, of course, there's always acquisitions and changes in management and so forth. But a testament to open source is that the technology lives on and continues to grow. And as you mentioned, we're building new products, and they're all based off Linux, of course. And Linux itself continues to grow. I was just at the Linux Foundation board meeting last Friday, and we were hearing a report from Greg KH. And we were talking about how the current Linux kernel community continues to grow and is adding new developers and new features. So we're in a growing environment. SUSE as a company, of course, continues to grow and expand both in customers and in products and services. And we can talk about some of those in detail in a minute.
And actually, we have a question from the chat room already. I might want to get to that. What was the breakthrough project for SUSE?
What was the breakthrough project? There's been a whole bunch of them. I think as of late, the two that I would highlight that are breakthrough now are their container as a service platform. We call it CASP. And then the second one, which is more recent, is what we call CAP, or our cloud application platform.
Cool. And how long have you been involved with the company?
A lot of years. So I actually started before I had gray hair. So how many years that is, I've lost track. I joined. I actually worked for Novell back in those days. And when Novell merged with SUSE, that's when I became involved with SUSE. And then, of course, there's been acquisitions since that point. And so SUSE is now owned by Micro Focus, but I should say is very much an independent and very vibrant and growing company. And it's a great relationship with Micro Focus.
I don't know if you'd be able to talk about this since you weren't there from the start, but did the founders figure out that there must be some way to make money off of an open source product?
Obviously they did, right?
Yeah.
And some companies scratch their head. Even my neighbors and friends, when I tell them I make free software, they go, well, then how do you live and survive? And I say, well, I just have a lot of fun. There's a lot of different business models associated with open source, but obviously SUSE figured out a very good one.
Well, of course, I always say that, you know, we give it away for free, but we make it up in volume. We hope that works, right? So tell us about the I'm just doing sort of the overview here first so we figure out detailed questions we can ask later. So what about OpenSUSE and how does that relate to SUSE, the company?
So OpenSUSE is of course, an open community, right? It's a community distribution of Linux, whereas SUSE provides the enterprise-grade, hardened, tested, solid, right, distribution of Linux, which you want to use in your mission-critical and enterprise solutions, right, to deliver that. Got to have it running 24/7 services to my customers, right? If, for example, air traffic control, you can't have it go down, right? And it runs on SUSE. So, but we have a very thriving community called OpenSUSE. It's very much independent. In fact, I used to be the chair for a couple of years for that community, and has its own governing board. The board members are elected from amongst the active community members, and they have a lot of projects, open source projects that are tied to OpenSUSE and used by the community.
And at the opening of the show, I made the comparison that maybe this is sort of like the relationship between Fedora and RHEL. Is that a fair comparison?
It's somewhat a fair comparison. Yeah, it's like I said, it's very much independent, driven by their members. The decisions are made by the members, of which, of course, there's a lot of SUSE people that are members of the community. And there are direct ties, just like there is with Fedora, but very much tied with SUSE, SUSE engineering in particular, where we're actually consuming and using open source as a basis to build our SUSE Linux Enterprise services and products.
Well, just being naive then, is there the equivalent of CentOS then for SUSE?
No, it's more closer to a Fedora.
So, Alan, I'm curious. I mean, one of the things I was surprised at, and by the way, I just downloaded SUSE Enterprise Linux for Raspberry Pi, and I installed it. So I'm booting that up here in just a minute, and maybe I can share my screen so people can see what it looks like who aren't familiar with it. But one of the things that I noticed, which was different, I haven't looked at SUSE in a long time, by the way. I cut my teeth on Red Hat. I typically use an Ubuntu derivative today for all my hobbyist stuff. So maybe let's start there. So why would a person like me want to run SUSE? And maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I would want to run OpenSUSE. But you tell me, why would I want to cut bait and switch to SUSE as opposed to one of the Ubuntu derivatives for a hobbyist or a small business running, you know, 10 or 12 servers?
So that's a very good question, and actually you answered it yourself, right? You said you use Ubuntu as a hobbyist, but then when you get to business-related services and so forth, people switch to SUSE. It has a very good reputation as being solid, has a very good reputation as being very well supported. Particularly for long terms, we have customers that are running versions of SUSE that are 10, 15 years old, right? And it's mission critical, and they need it supported for a long period of time. They need something that they can ensure is very reliable and robust. Second big reason they pick SUSE is because of the plethora of platforms that are supported. You know, all of, as you mentioned, it's now out there on Raspberry Pi. But we go all the way from the smallest platform all the way up to the mainframes, right, and the supercomputers. So you get that variety of platforms. You get the variety of hardware, the networking drivers, the storage drivers, right? And so SUSE is very big on partnering, and it's the support with all those partners that brings in that robustness. So it's not that we're just building Linux and delivering Linux. It's that we're building it and testing it and ensuring that it works well with all these different devices, the storage networking devices, the different hardware architectures, you know, CPUs and so forth, making sure that those are going to work well in your environment, particularly with your choice of those different architectures and services and applications.
Yeah. Now, if I remember correctly, and I was working on this install, so I apologize if you just talked about this, but SUSE was actually acquired by Novell back in the day, right? Do I remember correctly? And then it seems there's some sort of part. I don't know if it's a partnership, but it seems like SUSE has always been popular with the SAP crowd too.
Yes. Yes. In fact, if you're running SAP, it's going to be on SUSE. Pretty much, I don't know the exact statistic number, but it's in the high 80%, 90% style of market that's running SUSE. If you're running SAP, and you're going to be running on SUSE.
Yeah, but there's no official relationship. They just kind of developed over time, right? I mean, so besides a partner relationship, of course.
Yeah, it's a partner relationship. There's if you're inferring there's an ownership, there's not. It's just a long history of good partnerships, right? And that's why I was saying before, many people choose SUSE because of those partnerships and the strength of those partnerships. And those continue to grow. So, for example, as you mentioned SAP, right, you've had SAP services on SUSE. And just to throw in cloud for an example, we continue to develop those services and put those environments that our customers need, including cloud. So out there on private cloud, you know, through our OpenStack offerings, and out there on public cloud, working with other partners like Microsoft to make sure that we've got very robust, performant critical services like SAP running on Azure.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, is, you know, with everybody shifting towards newer technologies like containers and microservices and cloud, of course, you know, what are you doing in that realm specifically? What makes SUSE a good choice for people, you know, that are either, you know, migrating to the cloud or in the process? And, you know, I mean, what would make them choose that as an instance versus Red Hat or Ubuntu?
Sure. So a very good question. So as I mentioned, so we've got customers that are running private clouds, right? And so we offer infrastructure as a service using OpenStack as our basis for that. So we've built in that. And of course, we're building that on top of SLES, which gives us all of that robust 25 years worth of partnerships with the different hardware vendors and the different architectures. And at the same time, we're also working on the public cloud side. Now, SUSE is not delivering a public cloud environment of its own. Rather, we've determined that we'd rather partner with the key players in that industry, like the Amazons, Microsofts, Googles, and IBMs, and 40-some-odd others. And so we're leveraging them and making sure that the services that we're delivering on there are tier one, right? Making sure those services are equivalent whether you're running in private cloud or on public cloud. So it's not just delivering an instance of SUSE Linux out there on a public cloud, but also combining those, as I mentioned earlier, like SAP, to make sure that we're providing you with very high-tuned, robust images of those particular services.
So is there also the notion of, you know, if I am running this, if I'm a legacy SUSE user, if I've standardized to some degree, no one's standard anymore, but if I've standardized to some degree on it, then I've got continuity across the newer implementation methodology as well.
Yeah, and this is where we start to talk about containers, right? Because containers give me that portability. And so this is one of the reasons we developed our container as a service platform, is to try to help people, give them that portability, so you could transfer those services around to public and private clouds, wherever, you know, those services best fit your needs.
One of the things I noticed on your website on the when I went to download the this is how I discovered the Raspberry Pi version, actually, is I was going to download it and install it on VirtualBox or something just to run during the show just for fun, because that's what we do. We like to take a lot of risks while we're while we're doing the show. But one of the things I noticed is that there is a lot of different, or it seems that there's a lot of different versions available, and they're focused on specific things. Like, I think there's one specifically focused on microservices, for example. You know, is that, are customers adopting that? Do you see them saying, yeah, I'm going to pick up this, instead of a one size fits all, I'm going to go to this specific build for this specific challenge or project that I have in mind?
So you kind of lost me a little bit there on the question, but are you talking about containers? Or are you talking about,
there's talking about the, on the download page, for example, there's, of course you have the different, architectures that you support, right? There's Z systems and power and blah, blah, blah. Right. But then when I scroll down further, I saw the ARM and the Raspberry Pi. Oh, that's pretty cool. And then I scroll down even further. There's a CAS platform. There's a real-time version. There's a high availability extension. So I'm just curious about those things and how they play out.
Okay. Good question. So the thing you have to think about with Linux, right? What is it that the Linux operating system does for me? In very simplistic terms, what Linux provides me is a consistent and, like I said, very simplistic terms, it provides me a very simplified, consistent API interface to the applications and services above it, while abstracting away the hardware infrastructure underneath. So a lot of those downloads you're seeing there, they're all Linux, but it's Linux for different architectures, Linux for ARM, Linux for the mainframe, Linux for x86. But I have that consistent view above, right? Mm-hmm. So an interesting side note here, I'm working with the open mainframe community, and one of the programs we're working on there is an intern program. And so we're getting college kids to build applications on the mainframe. And, you know, of course, college kids are going, I've never worked on a mainframe. And we're going, you know what, you won't even realize you are, because it's running Linux. And it's the same Linux on the mainframe as it is on x86, as it is on ARM. So the customers are able to pick the hardware that performs best for their needs, right? But the applications and services that are running on top are the same. So a lot of those items you're seeing there are the same Linux. So they're just, you know, tuned to work on those specific architectures. And then the other items you're seeing there on the list, the high availability, the real time, those are services that we've tied into those to the Linux operating system to fit those particular platforms. Make sure, you know, you're delivering those services in a real-time manner or in a high availability manner, right? Building clusters and that sort of stuff to make sure that your services never go down. The last item there on your list was, of course, the CAS platform, which is a very highly tuned version of Linux built off of our 25 years of experience of delivering SUSE Linux Enterprise. But it's very specifically built for the container microservices environment. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Linux continues to grow and the number of contributors continues to grow in Linux. And that's because Linux itself continues to evolve to meet the latest needs of enterprise computing. And so in this particular case, we're leveraging Linux, we're using Linux, we're using that experience, and we've tuned and built the operating system, you know, filtering out all the pieces we don't need to make it fit and run very, very well in a microservices environment.
I mean, one of the things I've always, and maybe you can answer this for me, because I've always been kind of wondering about this as a partner for some of these other operating systems as well. Is, I mean, aren't you at all worried about things like microservices and containers, because don't they obfuscate the underlying operating system, especially serverless environments and serverless? I'm thinking, you know, mostly of like AWS Lambda and those types of things. I mean, at that point, doesn't the argument of which operating system you should choose kind of go away? And I guess, what's your answer to that, if there is a good one?
So the answer to that is serverless is kind of a misnomer, because there's still servers behind there. Basically, what you're doing is abstracting away making it much simpler and easier for the developer to use. So the IT department, the people that are the business departments, the business units that are in charge of making sure those services are there and available, they very much care about the operating system and which operating system is under there. What we've done is made it much simpler for the application developer to build and deploy applications. So the need for a good, robust operating system does not go away. How it's factored out definitely changes, and that's why you have the CAS platform, is because we're factoring it out so you can meet those needs. As serverless, you know, comes to fruition, serverless is still very early stages, by the way, but as that comes to fruition, it'll be very much adapted into this microservices environment. But the operating system doesn't go away. The need for a good enterprise grade, robust, reliable operating system does not go away at all. In fact, it becomes even more critical, because you're going to have more of them.
Yep. Good answer. So one more question on this platform topic, just because I'm so curious about this, is, you know, I do see for the Z systems, the mainframe stuff and the power systems, it's interesting that you still offer those, because a lot of distributions don't offer a version for those platforms anymore. So why is that? Do you have a big IBM contingency of users out there that are demanding this? Or
We do.
What's the breakdown? I don't know if you know roughly the breakdown in platform adoption among your customers.
I don't have – I apologize. I didn't know you were going to ask that question, so I don't have any numbers in front of me.
No worries.
We still have a very large audience on the mainframe. In fact, particularly in the supercomputer range, we have a huge audience that are running SUSE Linux. On power – I can tell you that on power, most recent number, we've probably got, I think we just announced 1,000 customers that are running SAP on power, SAP HANA, right? So these architectures are still very viable. I could give you some. So I don't want to get into specific customers, but there's certain types of workloads that are very, very relevant to these different platforms and architectures, you know, power, mainframe, x86, whatever. And so they're very viable. They're very valuable customers and very valued customers for SUSE.
One of the things that you've obviously been talking about SUSE's benefits from an enterprise perspective, the reliability and so on. But also there's the aspect of vulnerabilities and risk avoidance, and I'm just kind of curious, especially with the latest Spectre and Meltdown stuff that came out that affected everybody, not just Linux. I mean, usually Linux is considered, you know, somewhat hardened certainly from a virus standpoint, but this was down in the micro or the processor level. So there was nothing really any particular distribution or OS could do about it necessarily. So I'm just kind of curious, what are you doing in that aspect, from the vulnerability and risk avoidance aspect? And then, you know, was it especially with Spectre and Meltdown, was it just patching, you know, you got to patch your kernel and move on?
No, your question is very astute, because there's been all kinds of critical security bugs over the years, right? And there will continue to be going forward. So Meltdown, Spectre are just the latest two, but we've had others in the past. And this goes back to the whole reason you need a supported enterprise-grade Linux operating system. For one, we do a ton of security checks, but more importantly, SUSE is directly involved in the Linux development. We're directly involved in the security aspects and in being notified when security issues are found so that we can begin working on those before they become public and get announced. And so we have the expertise, we have the engineering expertise, we have the experts that are tied into those open source communities, not just with the Linux kernel, but other areas of open source development as well. And so we're able to very quickly jump on and begin to work those issues, hopefully long before they become public. And again, this ties back to partners, right? So Intel is a critical partner. AMD is a critical partner. And so we have those relationships with the open source communities, but also with the hardware partners in this case, so that we can, as quickly as possible, work those issues and get those solved for our customers. You typically, you know, in if you're just pulling from top of tree, doing an open source, you know, roll your own type of stuff, you don't have that advantage. So getting a solution in a critical time frame is very hard if you're just pulling top of tree.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know that when I was at New Relic, there was a lot of our customers when this Spectre meltdown thing happened, you know, they were concerned because they couldn't really affect their what was going on in the cloud from a host operating system standpoint. So going back to, yes, the operating system still matters in the background. I mean, this is a case in point, right? You want to be able to patch
exactly
that underlying host OS, even though your containers may be, you can manage those patches yourself when something like this happens. You know, you're relying on somebody else to patch the host level operating system. And so having this available is really important.
Yeah. So SUSE has got tools, right? They're lifecycle management tools called SUSE Manager that helps you very easily get a very good picture of which images, which rollouts, which architectures that you need to patch. So a lot of times customers can get very confused and can be very complicated to know, okay, which systems out there do I need to patch? Which patches do I need for those? Have I patched those? Are they up to date? Am I missing something? And so SUSE has not just developed the patches, but the tools to make it very easy to make sure, to ensure that you are patched and up to date.
Mm-hmm. One more quick demographic question. Again, you may not know the actual numbers, but just in general, I mean, I always thought of SUSE as something that you run when you live in Europe somewhere, because I think its roots were in Europe. You know,
our roots are in Europe.
You know, the roots are in Europe, and I think that's why the SAP partnership has maybe been so successful over the years. Is there some sort of camaraderie there or something? I don't know, but I mean, how is that still true, or is that a misnomer? I don't know.
So it's true, and it is a little bit of a misnomer. So SUSE's headquarters are based out of Nuremberg, Germany. So a great place to visit, by the way. All of us that work here in the U.S. love to make that trip, particularly if we can get there during the Christmas markets. But our roots are there. And, of course, that means we do have a lot of customers that are based out of Europe. But we are very much a worldwide company. And our talent, as far as employees, are spread around the world as well. Many of our employees work from home offices and virtual because our interest is in making sure that we've got the best talent. Sales-wise, customer-wise, we are very much worldwide. We have a very strong presence in the U.S., particularly with retail and manufacturing and financial services and so forth. Same with Europe, same with Asia and Central and South America.
So I'm going to ask much less informed questions than Aaron has been asking. But if you can answer these sorts of things for me, you will have done the job. That'd be great. So I see SUSE, I see Red Hat, I see Ubuntu, I see I can't even think of any more right now. That's how bad
it is. Those are the big three.
Okay, those are the big three. Good. Okay. I was trying to imagine back to all the like last week at scale. Who did I see?
Yeah, there used to be hundreds, right? And there's a lot of community distributions, but you've picked the big three for business services.
Okay, now doesn't this sort of silo the development in a sense? I mean, how different are they? I know they're all using the same Linux kernel, I presume, but it's the differences would be what in the user space and the kinds of commands that are ported to it, the kinds of libraries available. I mean, how do these distinguish? Yeah. And the follow-up question will be, then how does a developer develop code for all three platforms?
Yeah. So it's a very good question. In fact, it's a very interesting dynamic because with open source, we're all working together, right?
Right.
And so I'm very much I just came back from a Linux Foundation event last week, and the week before I was at the OpenStack event where I'm working side by side with the Red Hat folks and the Canonical folks and you know, and yet on the other hand, here we're on the business side competing. So it's collaboration with competition. And in some sense, we leverage different markets and different customers, so we're focused on different markets. And some were direct competitors. But I think the way I would characterize the differentiation for SUSE is we like to call ourselves the open source company. And we like to ensure that we're going to be able to come in and fit seamlessly into your current environment. So it's not a rip and replace. We recognize that you've invested into particular architectures, right? In particular storage devices and networking devices and built your networks in a certain manner and so forth. And we want to be able to fold in seamlessly with that. And so to do that, we've built up a plethora of partners and a plethora of applications and services that goes on top of that Linux operating system or the cloud infrastructure. That's where you find the big differentiators is in the large number of partners that SUSE works with. And as I said earlier, we've put those together and we certify those to hand to the customer and say, look, you can run this in your environment using your infrastructure that you have and feel very confident that it's going to run in a very high performance way and very efficient and reliable manner.
Okay, cool. I guess that it still doesn't give me the roadmap of like which one of the three I should pick necessarily, although you sort of alluded to it a little bit. So cool. I think I'm covered there.
A lot of it's going to be based on a lot of those customers that choose SUSE. They look at their environment, they look at what they've invested in their environment, right? And they want to pick a Linux distribution that will support their existing environment without having to rip and replace everything. That's the big one. They look at the they look at the applications and services that they're trying to deliver, and they want to make sure that those will work seamlessly on top of the operating system. So those are the things that they're looking at. And then, of course, you know, so they want to make sure they don't have to throw away their current investment. Right. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure they're working with a customer that they know that's going to be there for them when they have needs. We talked about bugs, right? Okay. They want to make sure they're working with a company that's going to be there and can support them. They look at how long the company will support them. How many years can I go on, you know, my existing framework? So they look at all those different factors, and that's how they're choosing the distribution that they're using.
Okay, I think that sort of explains it. But I do want to move on. We're almost out of time, and I do want to move on. Floss Weekly was actually there at OSCON in 2010 when OpenStack was actually announced. I think we were the first like actual news coverage anywhere. And we're not really a news show, so it's really amazing. Coincidentally, we happened to be at OSCON, so we could do that. And then we did a follow-up in 2015 to kind of get caught up a little bit. But it's now 2018. What's relatively new in OpenStack?
OpenStack continues to grow, and I think that the thing that's relatively new is, and the thing that I love about open source is it continues to be used in new and different ways. We just added a new project called Kata Containers, and so we're building on that existing base. We've got all these these amazing users using OpenStack, right? In enterprise, what I call enterprise, so business ways, right? It's not just hobbyists. It's we're running our business on this stuff, and yet we continue to find new and interesting ways to use OpenStack and apply new technologies. So we just added a new project called Kata Containers, which will give us the ability to do get the robustness of virtualization, right, with the speed of containers. So it's pretty interesting technology, and it's new. So the bottom line is we've got robust users, we've got a very solid platform, yet we continue to experiment and grow with new ideas and new technologies.
Cool. And for those who don't know what OpenStack is, what's the elevator pitch?
The elevator pitch is OpenStack is cloud infrastructure as a service, which means I'm providing you a platform to simply manage all your resources in your what I would call a data center or a security domain. So it could be multiple data centers. I'm providing you a simplified interface to manage those and automate the use of all those resources, my compute resources, my networking resources, my storage resources, and so forth. Be able to do that with a very simplified interface, reducing my costs, reducing my overhead, freeing up my staff to be doing more and very much more interesting things.
So this would be the sort of thing a service provider like Google Cloud Platform could run, or Azure, yes, or something like that. So it's at that level. Do people also choose to run it on bare metal and be their own infrastructure provider?
They do. We have so if I'm trying to develop my private cloud, I will use OpenStack because I want to provide bare metal services. I want to provide containerized microservices. I want to provide virtualized services. I want to provide storage services and so forth. And so we have service providers that are doing that. We have businesses that are building private clouds to just provide services within their own companies. Perhaps an example of that would be BMW, right? They've built a cloud within BMW to provide services within the company, not as a public, right?
And so it just future keeps looking brighter. Actually, somebody made a comment of that. Techdino in the chat room says, the future looked bright. That's good.
And it's very bright.
And how? What's you're the chair of OpenStack Foundation. So what are your duties like with that?
I just run the board. I'm a volunteer, just like every other community member there. But hopefully as a board, we're helping to provide enthusiasm and direction to the community. But we're all volunteers, and we're there just to have fun.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Alan, it's been really wonderful having you on. We're almost out of time. Is there any other big sweeping topic that you can answer in about 3 or 4 minutes at most that we didn't cover yet?
I think we covered a lot of good topics. I think the big topics are is just you should – if you're not looking at open source today, you should be. There's so many exciting, interesting, innovative ideas that are happening in open source. You should just go out there and check them out. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to grow your career. You're going to grow your knowledge. And you're going to enjoy meeting a lot of new and different people from around the world.
Oh, I just got whispered in my ear here because I forgot to ask this question earlier. So what's on the roadmap? Where's SUSE headed?
SUSE is delivering, as I mentioned, the latest two products that are, of course, going to continue to supply SUSE Linux across the different architectures. We've got our next release coming, SUSE 15, Celeste 15. And then the two new products I mentioned earlier, we've got Container as a Service Platform, and we've got our CAP product, our cloud as a cloud application platform. So we're continuing to add and deliver new products. We continue to deliver our existing product base and enhance on those.
And I presume the CAS will run standard containers like Docker containers?
So it's a platform itself. There's different types of containers. And so we can run Docker containers. We can run all different kinds of flavors of containers.
Nice.
And our basis is to be OCI compliant. So OCI is a standard that we're working on in the open source community to make sure all those different flavors of container, like Docker, you said, are all compliant, and we can make sure they all run on everybody's platforms.
That sounds awesome. Awesome. Well, I don't know how much of a developer you are, but I'm going to throw a couple. Have you been a coder before?
I have, but it's been a while.
Okay. Well, I usually have two questions. I'll just throw them at you. You could just say, I don't even want to answer that. So what was your favorite scripting language?
My favorite scripting language is Python.
Okay. Yeah, I never get that answer anymore. It's like, no
hey,
more.
What are you talking about? Python's awesome.
And what text editor do you use when you're editing stuff?
I'm going to date myself here because I still use VI.
Yeah, that's okay. And you still call it VI too, which does date yourself because kids call it Vim now. So
I know they call it Vim. And I'm going, that's why I said I was going to date myself. But, you know, it's amazing. I don't even look at the key or think about the keys or anything anymore. It's the part of me, right? What to do.
Yeah, occasionally I pull up Vi because it's the only thing that's there because there's no Emacs, and if somebody asked me what key does this, I wouldn't know.
I don't know.
I just start doing it. It just waving my hand over the keyboard just magically does it. So that works out really well.
Yeah, that's why I still love it. It's just kind of embedded in my brain.
Well, Alan, it's been great having you on the show. It's definitely sharing a lot more. I actually learned a few things about Linux just on this show, so that's good. Knowledge there. A little bit enough to be dangerous now. So thank you for coming on the show and talking to us about SUSE and OpenStack and everything related to that.
Welcome. Well, thank you, Randall. It's been fun.
Great, great. That was Alan Clark representing the SUSE project, OpenStack, and probably wears about so many hats, he has a whole hat store. So, Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, he can open his own LIDS franchise, but for open source. Now, this is great. Like I said, I personally have been seeing SUSE pop up more. I mean, I hate to say this, but SUSE's been around for so long. It's just like everything else. It's like, are they going to be able to innovate? Are they going to be able to change? Are they going to be able to keep up with the time? So it's good to see that they're actually doing that. And like I said, more and more demand, at least from the customers that I've seen in my professional life, have been asking for SUSE to the point that it's become, one of the primary after it's certainly probably still number three after Red Hat and Debian support is SUSE support. And it is for those customers that are, in that world where they're either running SAP or they're working on IBM and they're tied to it. They do not want to give it up. I mean, they will switch vendors before they give up running SUSE. So they're very loyal as well. So it's good to see all this progress. I'd love to see what they're doing with cloud and containers. Very exciting times, I think, for at a point where people, like I said, have maybe been diminishing the importance of enterprise Linux operating systems. I think it's very exciting to see that they're doing so well and coming out with all these great new features.
Great, great. Well, we're almost out of time, so I needed to get on with going up on the upcoming guests. So coming up next week is the Etsy Viper Builder, which is a framework for building a particular style of interactions on the iOS platform. I'm learning a lot more about mobile programming because I'm heavy into Flutter right now. Rust, which is programming language from Mozilla. It's a systems programming language that runs blazingly fast, prevents seg faults, and guarantees thread safety. Let's see if they actually get to do that. The OWASP dependency track, which talks about software composition analysis to try to keep track of all third-party components that you're using. We have the Pigeon libpurple. Coming up after that, that's multiple chat protocols. It's a free and open source multi-platform instant messaging client based on a library called LivePurple. Okay. The Univention corporate server, which is server and IT management software to retain or regain flexibility and control, just added the schedule between last week and this week. Chomper. Chomper is an internet blocking program that he's developed for Linux. You can define a whitelist or blacklist of websites, and Chomper will block you from visiting non-whitelisted or blacklisted websites for a amount of time you specify. Great to focus. I tell you, I'm so distracted all the time by the web that I'm surprised I get anything done. Also, right after that, also now new to the schedule, The Lounge, which is a self-hosted IRC client. It's actually a fork of Shout, and they actually want to talk a little bit about the forking and why that happens. So it'll be a great set of stuff. Now, I was just at Scale. I have, I think I count 7 possible new guests, including, I'm really excited about this, we're going to have VS Code, the Visual Studio Code, one of the first, well, Microsoft, amazingly enough, is moving more and more towards open source, and VS Code is totally open source, top to bottom. It's a really beautiful editor, IDE. I've been actually using it to do Dart and Flutter code. It's the first editor I've actually jumped to away from Emacs. So that ought to tell you a lot of stuff right there, right? I'm not doing Emacs as much anymore, just for plain text. Okay, and also the other one we got is VLC. I can't believe I haven't had VLC on the VideoLAN something like VideoLAN client, right?
VideoLAN client.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't had them on. I had to Google Floss Weekly VLC. No hits. So they were there. Yeah. They agreed to come on. So that's going to be fun. And again, a bunch more too. A rewrite of Cassandra in C++. That ought to be interesting. Getting away from Java, getting much more performant. That's going to be a fun one, too. Anyway, all that, you'll find out about that and more if you go to the big spreadsheet for the show, which is linked from twit.tv/floss. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. And by the way, Pacific time changed in the U.S. This week. So if you're in the rest of the world, you're probably here late. It's just the way it works. Okay. Wednesdays live to twit.tv. You can follow us as Floss Weekly on Google+, or that also gets tweeted over to @FlossWeekly. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. That gets tweeted over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I have 2 messages from the home office. Did you know that the Twit Flash Briefing is now available in Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, and India? It's been in the U.S. for a while, so now is the perfect time to go to your Alexa app settings and under Flash Briefing, look for Twit. And also, it's time for our yearly Twit survey, and we want to hear from you so we can serve you better. Head over to twit.tv/survey and be heard. So anyway, that's all I have to plug. What do you want to plug, Aaron?
So real quickly, I'll plug a couple of things. Number one is my book, Linux for Makers. You can go out and pick that up wherever better books are sold. I don't know. Do people still say that? Go out and get the book, even if it's not for this particular audience, but if you know someone who's into making, maybe they're trying out Raspberry Pi for the first time and you want a book to teach them the basic ins and outs of Linux. This isn't for the expert users, for the beginner user. If you want to help them along their journey, go check out my book and pick it up and give it to one of your friends maybe that's just starting out with Raspberry Pi, who came out with a new model today, by the way. I know we don't have time to talk about that. The other thing is, check out if you're in the Northern California area, you're looking for a good makerspace. Maybe you're a former tech shop person and you're looking for a good makerspace to join, check out Benicia Makerspace, which is my, side project. I don't know what it is. It's a nonprofit that I started 3 years ago to help new makers learn and develop and have a place, a nice shop that they can come in and use tools and equipment and all that kind of good stuff. So check that out as well. We always are accepting donations as a 501c3. We need all the support we can get. So you can contribute any way you want to that. We appreciate any and all contributions.
You know, I always used to say back when we had brick and mortar bookstores that people actually went to. I know there's still a few left, but they're all closing around here. So there was a Barnes and Noble right across the street here, and that's long gone now. You know, that's just an empty space. You know, it's just pretty sad. The way I used to say it, I just to follow on what you just said, I used to say my books are available at better bookstores everywhere, and the way you define better bookstore is they sell my book.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So it works out. Once again, Aaron, thanks for jumping in as the co-host on this show. Your knowledge is about 5 orders of magnitude bigger than I am about Linux. So that's
think so. You did a fine job. I could have gone on for hours. It's talking about all the ins and outs and the history of SUSE, because it's been a kind of a sordid history. So, we don't have time for all that.
If I even seemed like I knew anything about Linux, I was faking it. So you're Googling quickly. That's the only thing I know about these days. Anyway, thanks a lot, and we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.